Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We got an email here from Chris.
Says, hey guys, great work on figuring out HMFICs from my last email. That might have been on Thinking LSAT. I can't remember if that was from the Daily or Thinking LSAT. But HMFIC, of course, means head motherfuckers in charge. Chris says, I learned that in the military, I think, where there was always a staff non-commissioned officer in charge, SNCOIC, or an officer in charge, OIC. I guess in both cases, that's the HMFIC.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
An attorney recommended this Vanderbilt Law Review article by Judge Patrick Schlitz from 1999. Schlitz is a federal judge in Minneapolis now, a Harvard grad, etc. You guys are doing the Lord's work by being so honest about the bleak reality of the work of lawyers, and yet so many of your listeners and readers and writers into the show seem to think that they will be immune to the soul-crushing demands of big law life. I'm only about a quarter into this article, but maybe you guys can skim it or share it on the podcast or blog or something. I think it's important reading. It's from 1999, but it can't have gotten better. If people think they're going to do big law after reading this, whatever, God bless them. The world needs a couple of sociopaths, I guess. Around page 24 or 25, he states, and I'm paraphrasing, that 2,000 billable hours may not seem like a daunting task, but the naive law student has yet to learn that they will only bill about 2 out of every 3 worked hours.
I've actually heard it's 2 out of every 4 at first. You just lack the skills, and so a lot of your work can't be billed.
Yep.
Anyways.
Assuming your commute takes you 45 minutes, then you will leave the house at 7:45 and arrive home each day at 7:15, 6 days a week, in order to make your 2,000-hour goal. Lawyers are extremely unhappy, and they're unhappy because they work too much. I haven't gotten all the way in yet, but Judge Schlitz, professor at Notre Dame Law when the article was written, I think, does provide some advice on how to be happy as a lawyer. And one of his pieces of advice, I'm pretty sure, is simply to avoid big firms. Thanks again, Chris. So, Ben, you skimmed it. I actually took a couple hours and read the whole thing.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. It should be required reading.
Yeah.
We'll share it. We'll put it in the show notes. We'll figure out how to get this out to y'all. You could also, I'm sure, just Google it. Vanderbilt Law Review, Judge Patrick Schlitz, S-E-H-I-L-T-Z. It's a 1999 law review article. Anyway, I did read the whole thing, and it got into a lot of reasons why lawyers are unhappy. But yeah, greed is one of the main ones. He talked about law firm culture is basically we're going to abuse the shit out of people for the first 1/3 of their law firm career because we need to take profit out of the firm. Well, the way we take profit out of the firm, the partners, right? The way the partners take profit out of the firm is they bill associates for more than they pay the associates. So they bill to the client more. Obviously, this is how profit works. Yeah. But they charge more for the associate's time than they pay the associate because they are the partner of the firm and they're going to take profit. So that's how the partners make, you know, millions. They pay you $200,000 a year in a big law firm, but they are making, you know, millions, 2 million, 4 million, 20 million a year as a partner of a big firm. And for the first third of your career, that's what they're going to do. They're basically pimping you out and taking profit.
Yeah.
For the middle 1/3 of your career, you know, and maybe this is when you're a junior partner or a senior associate, junior partner. For the middle 1/3 of your career, you are roughly break even. So they're compensating you roughly the same amount that you're bringing into the firm. And then for the later 1/3 of your career, that's when you finally get paid back for all of the abuse you took during the first 1/3 of your career. And this is why law firm culture can't ever change, because the people who are making the decisions at the top are the people who already paid their dues. And if they are the one out of 10 who make it to partner, well, now it's payback time.
Absolutely. What That's was the goal of sacrificing all that time and
right.
sanity.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting.
And it also talked a lot about the culture of big law life and, you know, the kind of keeping up with the Joneses, the way that insidiously your expectations of what kinds of vacations you go on and what kinds of it talked about like all these expensive habits that you pick up. You know, it's like, well, I make $200,000 a year. Of course, I'm going to drink the $100 a bottle wine or whatever. And you it's like totally unnecessary money that you're spending. But you just develop, you know, fancy suits and fancy cars, and you only have 4 days of vacation, but you fly to fucking Tokyo and back in those 4 days so that you can make the most of it. And you just like all these expenses that, you know, you just basically burn through all that money that you're making. And that just, you know, it's a self-reinforcing culture of misery. As far as the billing thing is concerned, you know, that billing 2 out of every 3 worked hours. He went into it a little bit more and started talking about how you also immediately start compromising your ethics almost on day one. And part of the reason why you're going to compromise your ethics are because of that crazy billing requirement that you'll start padding almost immediately. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you're going to do a 2-minute phone call and bill 15 minutes for it. Or you're going to be traveling, right? So 5-hour flight, New York to Los Angeles, charge the client for your time. Also work on the plane and charge a different client for their time, for your time doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, billable hours, right? And you can get away with it. So the culture really strongly encourages you. Because who's telling you, like, who's telling you not to do that?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because it just seems so blatantly wrong. But the title of this article is on being a happy, healthy, and ethical member of an unhappy, unhealthy, and unethical profession.
Yep. And that's the... You know, this isn't somebody bullshitting. This is a law professor and apparently now an actual judge. This is someone who has experience inside big law firms, and a law professor and a judge telling you that this is an unhappy, what is it? Unhealthy, unethical profession that you're getting yourself into. One of the main takeaways was don't do big law. Of course, when you're saying don't do big law, what you're also saying is don't make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the main idea here is like you can be happy, you can be healthy, you can be ethical, but you're probably not going to do that in the context of big law, which means you're probably not going to make big money, which means you really need to make sure that you don't impoverish yourself with student loan debt that will force you to then go chase the money in order to try to repay your loans. If you're going to be a public servant, if you're going to change the world, if you're going to be happy and healthy and ethical in this field, you know, you need to start by taking care of your financial future by essentially getting a scholarship to law school or just don't go.
Yeah. Not becoming dependent on the field because right. you basically took out a huge loan and now need the field to pay you back.
Yeah. And if I was in charge of, you know, the like put me in charge of the ABA section on legal education.
Yeah.
Or put me in charge of the U.S. Department of Education, making the determination whether law schools should get whether the loans should be funded by the U.S. Department of Education or
yeah.
loans guaranteed by the U.S. Department of Education. This law review article, again, from a law professor who is a judge, this law review article would be required reading for anyone who wanted to go to law school. You know, like, oh, you don't have time. You can't find an hour and a half to read this article before spending 3 years and hundreds of thousands of dollars. I can see it now. Like, I know that people are going to hear this and go, yeah, yeah, but I know that's not for me.
Yeah.
It's like, well, OK, you know, best of luck. But I think you should, you know, it's like people don't want to hear it because it's, I don't know, they just don't like, they don't like where it's headed, right? They don't like the conclusion. So they don't want to hear the evidence. But if you can't, you know, I think you should read it and then decide.
Well, it's interesting too. I'm looking at his very, very last section, right? It's titled Some Parting Words. I have mixed reactions to what he says at the end here. Let me read this, even though okay. It's a little bit long. It says, to an unfortunate extent, this article has been an exercise in, quote, do what I say, not what I do. As I said, I joined a big law firm after I finished clerking, and despite the best of intentions, I quickly got sucked into the game. It is very, very hard to avoid the pressures and temptations pushing you toward the big firm. Very, very hard to avoid playing the game once you arrive at the big firm, and very, very hard to stop playing the game once you have left the big firm. I failed on the first two counts and continue to fail from time to time on the third, but I want to leave you with the following. By way of illustrating that it is never too late to change, even when you've failed as much as I have. My firm was lead counsel for the plaintiffs in the Exxon Valdez oil spill litigation. Remember that?
Yep.
Fiasco. In 1994, while I was still a partner, we won a judgment of over $5 billion. That would be a lot more today. We partners all knew that if and when we collected that judgment, even the smallest partner share would be a few hundred thousand dollars. Most of the partners would become millionaires. Because my wife and I would both be partners, we would enjoy two slices of this enormous pie. At about the time of the Exxon Valdez verdict, my wife and I were beginning to feel that somewhere along the line, we had lost our way. We were working constantly. Wait, what? Is that what that says? I don't know if that's what that says. Anyways, it's a word I don't recognize. We were under constant pressure. We were constantly feeling guilty about the hardships we were imposing on each other and on our children. The life we were leading was not the life we had envisioned. We had strayed from the values with which we were raised. In early 1995, we decided to leave big firm practice and to leave the Exxon money behind. We decided to give up a ton of money in return for work that was more enjoyable and less stressful and for more time with each other and our children. All of this we decided was more important than money, even lots and lots of money. Now, this is where I have like some like qualms. I don't claim that we made an enormous sacrifice. We did give up a lot of money, but we still get paid well and we have great jobs. Nor do I claim that we have stopped playing the game. That we have no regrets, that we never look back, and that we don't care about money anymore. None of that would be true. Living a balanced life and defining success for yourself are lifelong struggles, and they do not end once you leave a big law firm. The one thing I can promise you is that as we rediscover every day, they are struggles well worth undertaking. Okay, so my issue with this is that this is someone saying, hey, don't do big law, but clearly did big law, and also reaped enormous benefits from it. I mean, quitting at this point, yeah, is giving up a lot of money, but this is also someone who has a lot of money and it's easy to quit.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think he would say don't get into it in the first place, right?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. That's the issue though I'm taking, I guess, is like, really? Like, do you really think that you would have preferred the life that you wouldn't have if you hadn't done this? I mean, he's probably extraordinarily wealthy because of these choices.
Sure.
I'm not telling anyone to go do big law. I think the vast majority of people are going to be miserable, but it's weird coming from someone who made a lot of money from it.
Sure. I want to know what our listeners think. You know, you should email daily at lsatdemon.com if you have any comments about this law review article, or if you want to just ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Again, that's daily at lsatdemon.com. Thanks for listening.